Welcome to this brand new episode of the Marketing Technology Podcast. This podcast is hosted by Mark van Horek and myself, Elias Krum. We're both from Marketing Guys, a MarTech agency based out of the Netherlands.
Welcome to this new episode of the Marketing Technology Podcast. Today, I'm delighted to have Steven van Bellegem on the podcast. He's the international keynote speaker and author of his latest book, The Offer You Can't Refuse. And I would like to ask you to introduce yourself, Steven.
All right, Elias, first of all, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be part of your podcast. The core of my passion basically is to create and share ideas about the future of customer experience. That's what I do. And I do this on multiple platforms. I have the books that I write. The Offer You Can't Refuse is my fifth management book. I've been doing that for more than 10 years. I have my social media, my Instagram and YouTube, where I share a lot of content. I write blogs, articles. I give keynote presentations. But I'm also an entrepreneur and investor in the field of customer experience. I have started a company called NextWorks, where we organize inspiration tours and where we take executives to innovative parts in the world. Now with COVID, that's a little bit difficult, but before and after, that's what we do. Today, we do this online to inspire people and to make sure that they get fresh new insights in this field. I'm also part of the Intracto group, and I'm an investor in Hello Customer, which is a customer feedback platform that uses artificial intelligence to capture detailed insights on customers' feedback, and that translates that back to the organization to make sure they can act upon that. So I try to be active on multiple domains, but in the core, it's all about the future of customer experience.
Cool. And you're based out of Belgium?
That's right. Yeah, I live in Belgium, very close to Bruges.
Oh, nice. And in Belgium, you also have 24 hours in a day?
We do. We have 24 hours in a day.
Because you're doing so many things, you know, you must be working. And you know, maybe you won't even consider it as working because it's almost like a hobby that you're doing. But I'm looking forward to this customer experience topic and this show. And I'm immediately handing over the podcast to Mark, because he's dying to ask you a couple of questions on customer experience.
Cool.
Yes. Hi, Steven. Hey, welcome to the Marketing Technology Podcast. And as I said, this is the Marketing Technology Podcast. So I'm very curious to know how you see technology as part of the customer experience, because I can imagine that we more and more using technology for our marketing. But if you use marketing technology in the wrong way, that can be very creepy. It will deter people, give a bad rep to your organization. Whilst on the other hand, if you do the marketing technology part, if you do it right, it will help you to get closer to your customer. How do you see this marketing technology combined with the world of customer experience?
Yeah, very, very interesting question, of course. I believe that technology plays a crucial role in creating a cool customer experience. But on the other hand, I see many organizations that start with the technology question, and I think that's the wrong starting point. I don't think you need to start the debate by asking yourself, what technology do we need to invest in? I think you should ask the question, how can we create value for the customer? And let value creation be the guiding star and let technology be the enabler. And to better understand that, I often work with the idea of scarce resources. I think that customers have scarce resources, and the scarcest resource, what's your opinion? What is the scarcest resource of the average human being on the planet?
Time.
Time, well, of course.
At least, that's...
Time is the scarcest resource. Just think about it. If you ask someone, how are you doing? They don't say good or bad. They say busy. I'm busy. That's the answer that you get. Time is our scarcest resource. Now, if you start from that perspective, then the question is, okay, we need to manage the time of our customers better. That's what, you know, a big part of customer experience is about today. And then there are two things that you can do with the time of your customers. First, you can help them to save out time. And on the other hand, you can help them to enhance their time, make it more relevant, make it better. And I think the two dimensions, saving time and enhancing time, are both extremely relevant to make a customer happy these days. On the one hand, they want efficiency. On the other hand, they want entertainment, friendliness, relevance, right? And the cool thing is that new technologies can actually help us to enhance the time and to save our time. And if you translate that to customer benefits, I like to work with three customer benefits that can be created thanks to the usage of technology. First one is faster than real-time customer service. Try to anticipate to problems. You can do that as a human if you're really good in your job, but if you want to scale it, you need technology to do that. Hyper-personalization. It's not about the individual customer. It's not about the average customer. It's about the needs of the individual customer. That's the second benefit that you can create. And the third one is convenience. No matter which industry you are in, just using the apps on the homepage of your phone as a benchmark for convenience is what you need to do. And if you use that mindset, if you create those, you know, those value points for customers, and you use technology in a smart way to enable that, then I think you can create a magnificent customer experience. And then technology is, of course, a crucial element to make that happen.
Yes. And another thing that pops up in my mind, I'm not sure if you ever heard of Gary McGovern. He has had top tasks, and he had this whole system. And what he said is that people always come to your website or to your system, or even with employees with the intranet. They don't come for fun. They come for a task. And they want to fulfill that task. And everything that is in their way, they'll say, I'll go away. But the ones that understand that time is valuable, and therefore you have to help me fulfill my task as soon as possible, those are the ones that will win. How do you think about that part? And what Top Task also says is really ask the people what they want. Their intent of going onto a website is not enough. Just statistics, Google Analytics or whatever, it's great, but won't give you the full picture. So you have to ask the people. How do you see that part of getting the customer experience, not just going from the technology point and more like implicit, but really getting in touch with the customer? What's the best way to do that? Get in touch with them.
All right. A couple of elements in your question. I agree with the theory that you go to a website for a certain task and that fast and easy are the most crucial elements to make you happy at that moment. That is the situation where you explicitly go to a certain location to conduct that task. But what you see now is that we see this whole new movement where a customer doesn't come to you, but where you come to the customer, right? In the old world, we were trained to go to a store physically, but also online. We went to Amazon.com. We went to that website. What you see today is that the store and the buying opportunities are surrounding us. Huh? If you go to Instagram, you can buy directly there. TikTok is working together with Shopify to make sure that you can buy directly on from merchants on TikTok. So everywhere we go, we suddenly have buying opportunities. In that world, for me, it's not just fast and easy. It's also fun that needs to be added there. I believe that every organization is also becoming an entertainment company, that people don't just want to see the boring stuff, but they want to be entertained. Not if they want to go for an explicit task and if they need to fast and easy, that's a certain track. But there's also room for entertainment in the customer experience. And sometimes I think that we are just too boring for many organizations. And you can do fast things in a fun way as well. But not being boring is also something that people really value. Right? If you look at the major brands in the world, they do outstanding stuff that people talk about. And it's not boring. It's interesting, or it's fun, or it's funny, or you learn something from it. And I think that can also create value. So I think that both dimensions should be looked into by an organization. Now, to come to the second part of your question, how do you get feedback? There's so many ways to get feedback. I have a history of working in a market research company for 12 years. I was a partner at Insights Consulting, today one of the largest and one of the most innovative companies in the world in that field. There I learned that you have to make sure that you involve customers in almost everything that you do, but indeed that you get feedback that is qualitative. I'm a huge fan of qualitative feedback, where you understand why they do certain things and why they like things and why they dislike things. Like the company that I invested in, Hello Customer, has a very simple philosophy. They ask customer feedback just with two fields where you need to give your feedback. First is a net promoter score between 0 and 10. Would you recommend this company? Second item is an open field where you can type in whatever you want and motivate why you give that score. And then I have an algorithm that dives into those comments. And it's a very good algorithm. It really translates those words from the consumer to insights for an organization on a very detailed level, where you can actually see what the problem is or what the motivation is or what the strong points are. And it's very actionable. And I think that's the most important thing with customer feedback, that it's easy for the customer and that it gives you the opportunity to be actionable. But I mean, it's a valid point. I think most companies and senior leaders don't stand enough in the shoes of their customers. Sometimes I ask myself the question, like when a CEO of a big financial institution, when they lose their credit card, how do they get a new one? Do they go through the process that I have to go through as a customer, or do they ask their assistant a new credit card because they're part of the bank? You know, it's how often do they walk into the shoes of the customer? I recently talked to the former head of innovation of Disney, and he told me that if you work at Disney, you have to spend one day a year in the house of a consumer, really go to the house of the consumer, because you see the context in which they live. And they don't just give you an answer on a survey, but you see the kind of pictures they have. And certainly with Disney, I mean, it's about family memories. What do pictures look like, and what can you learn from them, and how can you translate that in your marketing, in your communication, and in your service delivery? So there are many ways to do it, but it's just a matter of actually doing it.
I love that the way you referred to it earlier in this interview, that, you know, where you said in the past, the customer would come to a company, and now the company needs to come to the customer, offer an experience, which leads me to the question is like, you know, given the fact that expectations on customer experience are rising and rising, we all have that Netflix expectation, you know, we don't even know what Netflix is doing with us, but you know, about 80% of stuff that we see on Netflix is just because Netflix recommends it to us. The question would be, when I have a company, when I am a marketer, where do I find the right customers that like my product or service and like my experiences?
It's a very difficult question. How do you find the right customers? Absolutely. Or how can you make sure that they find you? Maybe that's the turn it around to question. And Netflix, I love Netflix. Netflix is a great example. How does Netflix find the right customers for their content? I saw a case study on how they launched their series Narcos. Do you know Narcos?
Absolutely, love the show.
Yeah, it's cool. I like it as well. So we both discovered it, and they did one of the most advanced advertising campaigns I've ever seen, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. They created more than 1 million trailers, different trailers for Narcos. More than 1 million.
1 million trailers.
Yeah, just for YouTube. Just for YouTube. And it was based on your search pattern. Are you a businessman? Are you interested in sports? Are you more into leisure or entertainment? What is your search behavior? Mm-hmm. That created input to see which trailer would fit best with your profile. And then they launched it in 115 countries. And then they adapted those million trailers to the culture of the different countries. So they studied everything to make sure that they would reach out to you with a message that is appealing and to make sure that you would watch the show. But if you think about this, just imagine the amount of work that goes into it just to think this through, not even to produce it, but just to think it through. More than 1 million different commercials. It's almost personalized advertising. And this is only one show of Netflix. So imagine how complex and how much effort they put into it just to make sure that they reach out in the right way to attract the right customers. So the answer, Elias, for me is that there is no shortcut to success in this story. The companies that are doing a good job here are really going into it and are really investing a lot of thinking and effort into that process.
An interesting question there would however be, you know, let's say they have a million different commercials just for Narcos, and they showed me the right one because I love the show. I've seen all seasons and I'm probably going to see them again. So let's say I have a million.
You also rewatch Netflix shows?
Do you absolutely. Do that? Absolutely. Yeah, me too. Yeah, I do. Absolutely. I've just finished Homeland for the second time. I'm doing The Blacklist now. I don't know about Breaking Bad because that's so long. It's going to take me weekends and my wife will kill me for it. But anyway.
Although I recently rewatched all the seasons of 24. It's not a Netflix original, but I'm such a big fan of
24. Jack Bauer.
Jack Bauer. I'm such a fan of Jack Bauer. Yeah, I rewatched them all.
We all have time because of COVID. We don't have to travel anymore, you know. We all watch Netflix. But, you know, the interesting question there would be, how do they meet expectations once people come to the show? Because you have a million different commercials, so maybe a million different expectations there. So how do they meet all those expectations? Do you have an answer there?
I think it's very important that in each of those 1 million trailers that you give a realistic exposure of what to expect. I don't think you have to make 1 million promises or that you have to overpromise a million times. I think in the 1 million times you need to bring an offer that is in line with what people can expect. And then of course you bring it in a personalized way so that it attracts the attention of the audience and they're triggered to go in. I think that's important. And of course, let's be honest, the quality of those shows are just extremely, extremely high. It's not just an amateuristic kind of production that you're watching. It's state of the art. So the quality also has to be in line with the marketing power that you put behind it.
I can't wait for the new episode or the new season for Casa de Papel.
Me too.
it's due to come out probably March or okay. April this year. I think so. But didn't they have like a very intelligent campaign there? I think they had a campaign running in Spain, right? A real life campaign in bus stops or something. I can't remember. But
I don't know either. But I think it was something with the mosques. It's like in the beginning of the it's the third season. You have the fans are advertising everything. I think they did that in real life, but I'm not 100% certain.
And they had like buckets or let's say they had on the conveyor belts on airports, they would have luggage there with money printed on it and that kind of stuff. So something like that. They had like very cool. So Netflix does that very, very cool. Talking about Netflix, that's one of the big trends, of course. So you recently wrote a blog about what to expect in 2021 when we're talking about customer experience. Can you share some of those, let's say, trends that you see for the year?
Yeah, absolutely. I already discussed what I call everywhere commerce. That's that the shop comes to you. Another one that I'm very fascinated about is what I call the zero customer experience. In the last few years, we've seen an evolution that the effort to do something, to buy something, to find something is lower and lower. Mm-hmm. It's like what Mark said, it needs to be fast and easy. The ultimate step in that is that it requires zero effort, that it happens automatically for you, that you don't even have to think anymore about it, and it just happens. And I see a lot of interesting evolutions there. And I can see a world where at a certain moment that just the average consumer, just like you and me, that we outsource certain decisions to an algorithm and that we let the algorithm do the buying for us. Mm-hmm. At that moment, that means that the customer in some cases is no longer involved in the buying journey. Because a machine is doing it for us. And now you have a fundamentally new customer journey. What will happen if you automate certain buying decisions? And a lot of people believe that it's not possible, but the truth is that in most of the households, you have a certain pattern of consumption. Mm-hmm. And 80% of the things that you consume in your house in terms of food and drinks and products to clean the house and stuff like this, there is a certain pattern. And once there's a pattern, you can start to predict what people will need and when they will need it. And it's not so hard anymore to create an algorithm that does that for you. You have this company called Boxed in the US, East mm-hmm. Coast US, and they study those consumption patterns in your house. And then on Saturday morning, you get your box, Boxed. You get your box with all the stuff that they think that you will need in the week after that. You don't have to push a button. You don't have to remind them. There's just nothing that you need to do. It just happens automatically. And that's, of course, an advanced version. There's a lot of AI and stuff behind it. But the boost of the subscription economy is also part of zero effort. You don't have to think anymore. And it's not just digital products anymore that go into subscription. Look at Panera Bread, for instance. Mm-hmm. Panera Bread is very interesting to follow bakery chain in the US. Yeah. I think they do really cool things. And they recently launched a coffee subscription. I think you pay $5 or something like this a month, and you have unlimited access to coffee. So every time that you walk by a Panera Bread, you can go in, get your coffee, you walk out. But just imagine the kind of loyalty that you create because of that, the habit to walk into a Panera Bread when you see it. Guess what happens when you're hungry? So these are all new models that are very smart from a organizational point of view, but it's also extremely convenient from a customer point of view. And I'm fascinated by that one.
I think that's also, you're putting the nail to the head there, because in the past, and I'm talking about 5-10 years ago, when companies did that, that was like considered a product push. Mm-hmm. If they would try to sell you something, and now it's a convenience that you're offering to a customer, right? So it's people also consider it a convenience. So if I'm, let's say I have an iRobot vacuum cleaner at home. For me, I have not seen it in my app yet. And I've had the thing for half a year now, I think. But I have this extra one, which also has like a dust thing on it, etc. But why doesn't it offer me the opportunity to order an extra one when it's full, when the sack in it is full, right? So those kinds of things I would consider service. I wouldn't consider it a product push, whereas probably 10 years ago, I would have considered it as like, yeah, they're trying to trick me into something, you know, they're trying to trick me into some kind of subscription. But nowadays, people consider this. So this is a complete shift in consumer expectations as well, I think.
I agree. And you know, the most recent book that I wrote, The Offer You Can't Refuse, I play with a number of components there that I think are important for the modern consumer. And the most basic one is a good product and a good price. Obviously, it's still important. Yeah. Digital convenience is crucial today. We just discussed this in the last few minutes.
Yep.
But the next step is what I call partner in life. Not partner for life, but partner in life, where you try to think about all the worries that people have in their day-to-day life, mm-hmm. and you try to help them with it. It's not about optimizing a customer journey. It's about optimizing a life journey, seeing what kind of extra services would add value to their life. And they don't have to be free. Yeah. People are willing to pay for that and are just looking for the additional service. That's partner in life. And I agree with you. It's a new mindset that people want to be helped in a broader way. And if you offer that proactively, it is seen as a service. I fully agree, Elias.
Yeah, I think, you know, the US might be a year ahead of us here in Europe. You know, that's what I tend to see when I tend to spend some time in the US every year. And it's like a tick of me to walk into Best Buys, et cetera, talk to people, find out what they're doing. So all the, let's say, stuff that has to do with your smart housing equipment, etc. That's all common goods, and people expect it to improve. Expect you, the supplier or the manufacturer, to come up with extra stuff. You know, they can add to their system, etc. And I'm happy to see that that's now happening in Europe as well.
Yeah, me too.
What other kinds of experience or trends do you see for this year?
Well, what I think is that more and more organizations will dive into what I call a tailwind market, because many, especially of the incumbent players, are sick and tired of the idea that they're always going with a headwind. You know, it's the market is tough, competition is tough, margins are under pressure, and they work so hard, but they don't have the, you know, the adrenaline of success anymore because they have to go headwind all the time. Many of those organizations are now looking for tailwind markets, markets where they feel that they will grow, markets where they feel that they will, you know, have a completely different experience. And I came up with this concept thanks to a company in the Nordics in Europe called Egmont. And Egmont is one of the oldest content creation companies in Europe. They still make TV shows and magazines and all and movies and stuff like this. Like most of the Scandinavian shows, TV shows, that the crime shows that we all like to watch, they're made by Egmont. They are like the king of the world in that field. But a CEO, his name is also Stephen, he told me, he says, I'm so tired of the fact that we always have to fight. It's always tough. It's always, you know, hard work with limited effort. So he said, I want to go into tailwind markets. And he defined a number of them, like e-commerce. He said, e-commerce is still growing like crazy. I mean, we have to step into this. And this was beginning 2019 that he told me this. Huh? We have to invest more in e-commerce, but we don't want to become a next Amazon. We're going to go for e-commerce in those fields where we also produce content about, like everything that has to do with the kitchen or with healthcare or with personal care. We're going to create e-commerce environments around that. That was one thing. Another area of growth that they saw were games. It's a gaming industry is booming. We're a content producer. We need to go into gaming. But let's not make the next Fortnite. Let's target on an audience that is maybe unserved in the gaming market. And they started a game studio where they target people that are 40 plus. A lot of gaming is not for children or teenagers. There are a lot of 40 plus people that like to play games. And he said, let's go for that audience. And it's an interesting audience because gamers that are a little bit older, they stick longer with the same game. They are more loyal to the game and they tend to spend more money in the game. So that's an interesting audience. So they created a number of these tailwind markets. And I called with him in, I think it was September this year, and asking him how things were going. And he said, Stephen, we're so happy that we invested in those tailwind markets because now, of course, with COVID-19, we saw a huge acceleration there. And thanks to our tailwind markets, we're actually doing really, really well. So we're so happy that we anticipated to this. And I talk with a lot of organizations in different markets, different parts of the world, and many organizations are looking for tailwind markets, are looking for other ways to step into the market than what they have been doing in the last few years, just to make sure that they find the adrenaline of success again. And I think that will create a lot of dynamics in the market and that will blend industries. This will make sure that the borders between industries will not be as clear as in the past anymore. And that will be a very fascinating kind of business world.
Absolutely. So talking about... I wanted to ask one more question, Mark, and then I'll hand over for the final. Okay. Because Stephen was talking about...
We have to raise hands and so on.
Yeah, that will work. So talking about COVID, Stephen, you know, we're almost at the end of this thing. As the Dutch minister here in the Netherlands, he told us that this is the beginning of the end. We're starting vaccinations, etc. So let's hope COVID will be over by summer or autumn.
Yes.
Do you think this whole pandemic will have, let's say, effects and maybe lasting effects on customer experience?
Oh, yes, absolutely. You can look at the pandemic in a number of phases. In the beginning, let's say March last year, we mainly started to use digital to compensate for the loss of physical. Right, we had to go to digital meetings. We had to go to digital events because, I mean, that was just the only way to continue our professional lives and to see our friends and family. But we didn't really like it. We just did it. And now we're in a new phase. We're in a phase where many organizations are starting to see the benefits of these online tools, where we are not using them in an amateuristic kind of way anymore. I mean, if you look to the online events today versus a year ago, it's like
it's TV production quality that we're in now. It's a different world. So that, and that's not just with events, that's in multiple areas. And we're seeing changes in behavior. You see, for instance, that Peloton bikes, their growth is enormous. Huh? And then you see that if you have a Peloton bike, you're sitting at home with a large screen in front of you, and you have a life trainer that is motivating you to keep on going. You have a leadership board where you can see how others are competing at the same time as you are. So suddenly we realize that being on a Peloton bike in your house is actually a more social activity than going to a gym where a whole bunch of people are in the same room together, all with their watching a screen where no one talks to each other and you cannot even look at someone because that's seen as being impolite.
Yeah.
So suddenly the new experience is more social than the old experience, you see?
Cool.
And that's something that we're discovering right now. And then we're going to go to the exit. Let's hope this summer. And I think in the exit of the pandemic, what will happen is that we will grab back to all the stuff that we missed from the old world. And we're going to add that to the elements that work really well in the new world. The only thing that I'm certain of is that in many industries, many companies, they will build on fundamentals that were created during the pandemic. So I think they will take the new way of work and add the best of the old world to it. I don't think we're going to go back to the old world and add some elements of the new world to it. We're going to start from this new set of behaviors that we have. Then we're going to add all the things that we miss from the old world to it. And many of us will believe, look, it's just like it was before, but that will just be an illusion. Come on, let's be honest, guys. Let's not spend 2 hours in a car for a meeting of half an hour that is very functional. I think we're going to be more selective about that. I think that people who have a Peloton bike will not go back to the gym anymore. Nope. Business travel will change forever. Home delivery, subscription models that came during the pandemic will remain successful afterwards. So I think we're going to have a best of both worlds, but it's going to be different than before. The only strange thing is that we will probably not even notice it because the 18 months in between is a very long time and we have forgotten a lot of the stuff that we've done before.
Yeah, I also think that with the COVID part, is that we are much more aware now of time. We are now much more aware of social.
Yes.
Because till 2019, a lot of things were considered for granted. Mm-hmm. You know, we could do this, you could do that. Oh, I want to go, we're on holiday. Oh, take the flight to Thailand or whatever. We could do everything what we want. Very hedonistic. And then suddenly it was cut off.
Right.
And now, you know, we can't even cuddle each other. And so we're very much aware of the human basics, but also in time aspects. And so
I agree.
I think you're right with that. That the foundation will be what we are experiencing now, and we'll grab back what we missed from the past, but put that on the foundation that we have now, because that is our life as it is now. Mm-hmm. So I agree on that part. I was wondering, because I listen a lot of things. You give a lot of inspirational ideas. I love the tailwind markets idea. But let's consider that a listener is listening, or watching in this case, and they work for a B2B company. And they say, oh, yeah, great, Netflix and 1 million. You know, if you talk about Apple, you talk about Netflix, you talk about all these Tesla, these are very companies, but it's always the same companies. But I work for a software company, or I work for a manufacturing. We make salads. You know, something that you put on another. We make peanut butter, or we have got a we work in human resource. All kinds of B2B companies.
Right.
How would the customer? I believe that the distinction between B2B and B2C is an artificial one. We're all humans. Basically, it's the same. Even if I'm for a CEO, or I am I work for a B2B company, I'm still a human. So I'm looking at Netflix and all that kind of stuff. So I have this high expectation as being as a consumer, but that will drip through to the B2B world. And I can imagine that they will say, gosh, how are we going to cope there? Have you got any, for all the B2B marketeers that are listening now and say, have you got some ideas or perspective how the B2B world will also use that customer experience and all the aspects that you just said, but very much geared to a consumer part in their world?
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for the question. If you look to the average satisfaction score of B2B customers, it is significantly lower than the average score of consumers. Is that because B2B customers are expecting more? I don't think so. Because B2B people know each other. It's a personal relationship. So I even assume the opposite. In my opinion, the reason why it's significantly lower is because B2B companies have underinvested in their customer relationship. In many cases, B2B is still extremely product focused. And all they care about is their product, and they believe that it will sell itself. And I'm charging a little bit here. It's not as extreme as I'm putting it, to illustrate the difference. And at the same time, this is the biggest opportunity there is in B2B, because if you, as a B2B manager who is listening now, if you really invest more in your customer relationship, you will immediately have a return and immediately have a positive impact, because there's a big chance that the others in the industry will not do that or will not be able to do that. Now, how to start? The one piece of advice that I always give B2B companies is, and it's behind me here on my shoulder, appoint friction hunters. Go through every process that you have in your organization and look at it from a customer point of view and start to make lists of all the frictions that you possibly create in the interactions between your organization and your customers. And I'm not looking for things like, oh, our invoicing process is too complex. No, go more in detail and look for small, small details and force yourself to make a list of at least 50 frictions, small things. The cool thing about these small things is that in most of the times, they are easy to solve. And they don't even require a lot of budget or manpower, which means that if you do this with a group of people, imagine you work in B2B, you appoint 4 friction hunters. Each of you make a list of 20 small frictions that is not good enough in your online process, in your sales process and proposals and invoicing, the whole thing. And you each have 20 things. You put them together and then you select the half of them, 40, that are easy to solve. You put names to it and you make this agreement with each other that you will solve all these items in the next, let's say, 4 to 5 weeks, because they're easy to solve. No money needed, no manpower needed. And if you do that, and you have to keep the list and you have to celebrate every time that you remove the friction. But if you do that, you will be amazed on a double impact in the organization. On the one hand, customers will feel the difference. They will not really know what happened, but they will say, hey, we feel that things are changing here. It's cool. We don't know what you're doing, but it feels good, guys. Keep up the good work. That's one positive energy element that will arise. But also internally, because a lot of people are frustrated with the frustrations that you create for customers, right? And if they feel that something is happening, and if they feel that you are removing them one by one, and it's going fast, it's not taking 6 months or 9 months, then you create positive energy internally, and you create a higher sensitivity to, you know, be attentive for those small details that you could do better for your customers. And that is, in my opinion, a very pragmatic starting point. I know that's not highly strategic. I know that there's much more other things that you can do. But if you want to start somewhere, this is my advice, because you have instant happiness in the internal and external part of your organization.
I love it.
Yeah, that's so B2B marketers, if you're listening, I think if the B2B marketers are listening, I will consider 2021 as the year of zero friction.
There we go.
So focus on that part. It's the year of zero friction when we have to use the zeros, of course. So I really love that advice, Stephen. I think that that is something, and it's also not very high over. And I can imagine that if somebody's listening to customer experience and going this and this, oh my God, it's such a huge thing. No, go through all your processes. Where's the friction? Kill the friction. Zero friction, zero friction. Just say it every morning. Zero friction, zero friction.
I love your energy, Mark. I love your energy. Yeah.
Love it. So, Stephen, I would like to end the session here and by thanking you. It was great having you on the Marketing Technology Podcast, full of practical advices, you know, making a topic like customer experience very digestible and approachable, even for B2B marketers. You know, I love it. We will share your details for your website, for your LinkedIn profile, and you asked us to share your YouTube channel as well. So that's what we'll do. Is there anything else you would like to ask or say to our audience?
Oh, I am very thankful that you guys invited me. So thanks for that. I enjoyed our conversation. A lot of positive energy that you guys have. So congratulations with that. And I hope it brought some value to the listeners. So I hope they enjoyed it.
Absolutely. It must, you know, all the tips that you had, you know, I loved it. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much, Stephen.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Marketing Technology Podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform or iTunes. Also, if you want to be a guest or know someone that should be a guest to our show, shoot me an email on e.crum@marketingguys.nl. Thank you for listening.